Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Cornerstone Bank, a family-owned bank providing custom investments, trust, and estate planning services since 1882 with 42 central Nebraska locations. CornerstoneConnect.com. Cornerstone Bank, building trust on a solid foundation. And History Nebraska. Nebraska's archaeologists work side-by-side with private landowners to protect Nebraska's archaeological heritage. To learn more, history.nebraska.gov.
Good morning and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio, live from the Mill in Lincoln's Haymarket. I'm Genevieve Randall. Lots in literature to talk about this morning. In a little bit here, I'll have a conversation with poet Kwame Dawes about a recent award that he was given. And later, there are two different theater productions in York to discuss. Plus, we'll do a survey of concerts in Ord and Kearney. I invite you to stream the show online if you'll be away from your radio. The address is netnebraska.com. Or you can stream with the NET Nebraska mobile app. My first guest this morning is the writer of many poems, with over a dozen books of poetry, five nonfiction books, and too many chapbooks and special editions for me to count, a long list of awards and honors as well. He served as U.S. Poet Laureate from 2004 to 2006 and is the editor of American Life and Poetry. He's written four children's books now, the newest of which he's here to talk about this morning, but he's also a person who just seems to live with intention and with whom I always enjoy talking. Ted Kooser, welcome to Friday Live this morning.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
It's great to have you. The new book is Mr. Posey's New Glasses, and there are two different events that you're going to appear at, but let's learn about the book first. So Mr. Posey starts out in this book with kind of a gloomy outlook on life, I understand. Why is that?
Well, he thinks he needs new glasses. When everything he sees looks the same to him, kind of glum and drab and so on. And so he decides that he's going to go to the thrift shop and look through the glasses and get a pair that works. But every pair that he tries on, he sees something different through them. When he tries the cat's eye glasses, the dogs appear and start chasing him, that sort of thing. So it's one thing after another like that.
Yeah. Kind of a little adventure through glasses.
That's right, yeah.
And then he has a neighbor, right? Who is his neighbor?
Well, he has a little boy for a neighbor who goes along with him on this expedition to the thrift shop, yeah.
The first book signing that you'll be appearing at is at Chapters Books in Seward, and it's also a celebration of your 80th birthday, I understand.
True, yes.
Happy birthday, Ted.
Thank you, thank you.
At that event on Thursday, April 25th, attendees are asked to bring used eyeglasses to donate in lieu of a present. Where do those glasses go?
Well, I think I haven't talked to Carla about that, but it's my understanding that the Lions Clubs collect glasses.
Sure, yeah.
So we're going to give them to somebody, you know, yeah.
So you can recycle your old glasses at the Chapters Book event. Yeah. Mr. Posey is featured right there on the front cover in some glasses that have kind of star-shaped frames. Who did the illustrations for this book?
The illustrator is a guy by the name of Daniel Duncan, who is a Brit. He is new to Candlewick Press. This is his first book with them. I was sort of astonished that Mr. Posey turned out to look so much like me.
I have to say, when I looked at the front cover, I wondered if Daniel had used a picture of you in some star-shaped
glasses.
Had
no communication with him at all. In the children's book industry, they sort of discourage the authors and illustrators getting together. They don't want the author interfering with the illustrator.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. And that way the illustrator may have the freedom to just interpret as they see fit.
Yeah.
Do you have star-shaped glasses?
No.
You don't? No. So the other book signing event is at Francie and Finch in Lincoln, and that's on Saturday, which is a week from tomorrow, starting at 4:30. And you're probably, I think, going to be reading maybe at either one of those two events, but I'm wondering if you brought something with you to read this morning.
Well, yeah, I brought a poem from my new and selected poems, Kindest Regards. This is the poem, and it was written 30 years ago, probably. This is the poem from which Mr. Posey came.
It's amazing that it kind of fermented or stewed for that long, and then here comes this children book after that.
Well, I have been in many thrift shops in the 30 years, and yeah. In the basement of the Goodwill store, in musty light, in the thin brown air of damp carpet, doll heads, and rust, beneath long rows of sharp footfalls like nails in a lid, an old man stands trying on glasses, lifting each pair from the box like a glittering fish and holding it up to the light of a dirty bulb. Near him, a heap of enamel pans as white as skulls looms in the catacomb shadows, and old toilets with dry red throats cough up bouquets of curtain rods. You've seen him somewhere before. He's wearing the green leisure suit you threw out with the garbage, and the Christmas tie you hated, and the ventilated wingtip shoes you found in your father's closet and wore as a joke, and the glasses that finally fit him, through which he looks to see you looking back. Two mirrors that flash and glance are those through which one day you too will look down over the years when you have grown old and thin and no longer particular, and the things you once thought you were rid of forever have taken you back in their arms.
Thank you so much for reading that. You know, it reminds me that really when you go into a thrift store or any place like that, a flea market, there is sort of this magic to it.
Oh, yeah.
All of those treasures and discoveries.
Yeah.
And each one of them, it feels like has a story to them.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, thanks for telling us about your book this morning, Ted.
Thank you for having me.
Ted Kooser's new children's book is Mr. Posey's New Glasses. Chapters, Books, and Gifts in Seward celebrates Ted's birthday and the book on Thursday, April 25th from 6:30 to 8 p.m. And then Francie and Finch Bookshop hosts Ted on Independent Bookstore Day, which is Saturday, April 27th from 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. The book, again, is Mr. Posey's New Glasses, and you can find more about it right on the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. This is Friday Live on NET Radio. I'm Genevieve Randall. Last month, Yale University announced from London the 2019 recipients of the Wyndham Campbell Prizes, one of the world's most lucrative literary honors. The prizes recognize exceptional English language writers in various areas of writing, poetry, fiction, nonfiction, and drama. One of the winners announced was Kwame Dawes. Chancellor's Professor of English and Glenna Lou Shai, editor of Prairie Schooner at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Dawes is the first UNL writer to win the annual Wyndham Campbell Prize, and he joins me right now to talk about it. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
How did you find out that you'd won?
I think it was a Saturday. I was home watching Netflix and eating popcorn and working, of course. And I got a call from the organizer of the Wyndham Campbell Prize. And he told me, I, of course, double-checked, because one must double-check these things after all. And it was exciting. I know the prize. I know the prize quite well. So to get that call was tremendous. It was very exciting.
Now, I understand you didn't know that you were being considered for the prize.
No, no.
Nobody knows, right?
Nobody knows who is being considered for the prize. So one assumes always one is being considered. Ever since I was 20, I've been waiting for the call from the Nobel. I think they've been considering me since. I don't know what's taking them so long.
They issued a citation which kind of describes, I guess, a little bit about your poetry and why you were chosen. And they describe your writing in this way. Visceral, memorable, and urgent lyricism results in poetry of compassion, moral seriousness, and depth that resonates across continents.
That's one of the more gratifying comments, because I think anybody who knows my work knows that I am trying something that I need to reconcile my existence, in fact, which is to reconcile the fact that I was born in Ghana, in Africa, I grew up in Jamaica, I've lived in the U.S., and I've lived in Canada. I've traveled along this peculiar triangular space. My work tends to be about sort of finding an aesthetic that allows those disparate or different places to make sense as a whole and not just uniquely in me. And that is found in the history of diaspora, the history of Africa, essentially. And in a sense, that poetics has shaped my work. So for them to recognize that, I think, means a lot. I think what they were recognizing was that I am planted in multiple places, but yet trying to find a poetics that deals with that.
What does this change for you as a writer?
I do not regard myself as somebody who takes single moments to define a whole career, a whole life. I've always been aware that there'll be high points and low points, and I'm acutely aware of the low points. I mean, just after this was announced, I'd been shortlisted for a major residency. I didn't get it, and I thought, dolts. Silly people. What's wrong with them? And it just reminds me that I tell people to be patient and that at some point your work will get the recognition it does, but you just do your work. So I don't think it's changing a great deal. It's certainly not changing my perception of myself. Not really. But the money will be handy in some ways. But no, I don't think so. I don't. But then who knows? I mean, next time I walk in here, you might have to kiss my ring or something.
Oh, hey, all right. I'll mention that some of your most recent poetry and books, and feel free to throw in others too, are City of Bones, Speak From Here to There, A Cycle of Poems, and Be Conquer, new and selected poems. What's next?
Well, a new book came out not long ago, which is called New Beginnings, which is part of the cycle of poems that I've been writing with John Kinsella. Speak From Here to There is one, and then this is the next. And then we have another one lined up, which should come up at the end of the year. And then we are currently working on another one. So I'm constantly doing that work. We are two writers who are in conversation, but each of these volumes is, you know, almost 300 pages. So it's essentially two collections that we're putting out together. Recently, a wonderful craft book, a book just designed by a wonderful artist in Vermont, came out, which has art and my response to that art. It's a limited edition thing there. Each book costs like $750. It's like pretty fancy and quite nice, but they look good. And then a lot of my work is, I have a novel, Bivouac, which was published some years ago in England, which is now being released. That's just coming out here in the States. There are a number of other books that are supposed to come out this year as well. So I tend to be generating work all the time.
It's interesting to hear about the book with art that you respond to. Have you done that kind of thing before?
Always, yeah. First of all, my book, Requiem, which came out in 2008, are poems in response to the work of the late Tom Feelings, African-American artist. As a writer, I think I can say that a significant percentage of the work that I do are responding to some kind of art. I don't necessarily announce it in the work, and I don't give credit for it, because what's the point of stealing if you're going to tell people that you've stolen it? But that conversation is hugely important to me. And this particular sequence came about because I went into a gallery and I was looking at the work, and the artist came in and I said, I love this stuff. And he says, well, okay, I'll get you into your drawings. And he gave me these drawings, and just as a lark, I decided to write some poems and send them off to him for the fun of it. Eventually, you know, 5 years later, this book has come out. Responding to art is that I visit the Sheldon 3 days a week. Sometimes I'm fixated on a piece of art and I would just, you know, half an hour there just thinking about it and writing about it. It's important to me, and it comes through in my work.
It makes me wonder if you've tried it before with dance or music.
Yes, everything. Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah, I'm very responsive to other art forms. Again, I'm a thief. After they've done all that work, I just go in and pilfer all their images and they just, you know, disguise them a little bit, and voila, my poem.
Well, I'm a little bit of a thief too, and I would like to steal just a little bit more of your time if you've brought a piece with you that you'd like to read.
Sure. I'll read a poem that has become a bit of a sort of preface, you know, if we can call it that, in most of my readings. And it's called Rituals Before the Poem. In terror they will drink water grudgingly, Ezekiel chapter 4. Before the poem comes, like a word from a brazen sky, the poet must lie on his side for a year, eating only dry bread and measured bowls of water. The poet must pour sand over grass and build the walls of his city. The poet must surround the walls with the offense of guns and for days upon days starve the city of all its music. The poet's tongue will grow heavy and his limbs will be bound with cords so he cannot move. He will quarrel with God about the meaning of poetry. The poet will beg for mercy, lying on his other side for 190 days, his body scarred with the wounds he inflicts on his family. All this a poet does before a poem, so that when he walks out in midwinter, his face will be smooth, his eyes will have the quiet resignation we call peace, and his satchel will be full of whimsical lyrics about the color green and the sounds a woman makes in her dreams.
Thank you for reading that.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Kwame Das, congratulations again.
Thank you so much, yes.
UNL professor and editor of Prairie Schooner, Kwame Das, was recently awarded the Wyndham Campbell Prize. This is Friday Live on NET Radio. I'm Genevieve Randall. A 2004 play by John Patrick Shanley, which won a 2005 Pulitzer Prize for Drama and Tony Award for Best Play, is the next production at York College. The play is Doubt, a Parable, which many listeners may remember from the film starring Philip Seymour Hoffman and Meryl Streep. Deidre Freitas, did I say your last name correctly, Deidre?
Yep.
Deidre Freitas is directing the show and is a senior theater major at York College. Olivia Knapp plays Sister Aloysius and is a junior theater major, originally from Lincoln. So, Deidre and Olivia, welcome to Friday Live.
Thank you.
Thank you.
First time on the show for both of you, right?
This is my second time.
Your second time?
Yeah.
Olivia, my apologies. Well, so how close in content and structure are the stage production and the film? Do you know?
I think they're pretty close because, if I remember, I might be saying this wrong, the film was directed by the playwright, so he at least had a very large part in what happened in it. So right. Besides the fact that, like, with the film, they had a lot more people in it because the stage play is only four actors and actresses.
Sure. Now, I have to admit, I haven't seen the film, but I know from seeing trailers and little clips and whatnot, this is a very powerful story about some very powerful issues, religion, civil rights, the human psyche. For people who don't know the story, can you lay out who our main characters are and kind of the synopsis of this?
Yes. So it takes place in a fictional Catholic school in the Bronx in New York, and they're all main characters because there's only four of them, so like saying anyone is less than the other is a little strange.
Yeah. They're all for the lead, right?
Yep. Is Father Flynn, who is the priest of St. Nicholas School, and he is very progressive. He has a lot of ideas that for 1964 were a lot to take in because they were very staunch, very traditionalist, which is where Sister Aloysius comes into play because she is very traditional, very like there's black and white and I know what's right mentality. And then we have Sister James, who is the newest nun to the school, who was at a female, all-female school and is now here and is very young, a bit naive. She sees the world kind of rose-colored. And our last character is Mrs. Muller, the mother of Donald Muller, who is the boy in question that Sister Aloysius believes Father Flynn to be having an inappropriate relationship with.
Right. And, of course, very sensitive issues to be talking about. Olivia, in the role of Sister Aloysius, what is she like? How have you portrayed this role?
Oh, that's a good question. Sister Aloysius is one of the most caring characters I think I've ever played before, but she's very much set in her ways and very much set in rules and knows exactly what is right and knows exactly what she won't accept. And she does everything in the name of protecting the children and protecting the students, but obviously in the correct format. And I think that it's interesting to see Father Flynn and hers contrast, because they both seem to have the same philosophy and they go about it in very different ways. And I think that's where a lot of the clash comes in with their characters. So I think that's an interesting contrast to see.
I'm sure it's really rewarding to play a character like that, though, against a character like Father Flynn.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it would be. But
yeah.
What are some of the challenges, but then also joys, of either directing the show or being in it?
I think the biggest challenge is, like, right from the beginning, I've told everyone, it's ambiguous. We don't know if he did it. We don't know if he did do it. It's kind of left up to your interpretation at the end, which...
Yeah.
Everyone loves ambiguity so much, especially when, right. I don't know, I feel like we're in a place where we want to have yes or no, and no, yes he did, no he didn't, but I think that's a part of the charm of the piece, because it's just commentary, it doesn't give more than that.
Right, right. You and the three of us were talking beforehand about how the production, this is two nights only, the production is, as you're leading up to Easter, and today is Good Friday, and how's that been for you? What have your discussions been about the whole timing of this?
Well, there's a lot, like, theater is just a naturally superstitious, like, thing. Most people in theater are pretty superstitious, so for the show to be during Holy Week, I think we take that in a pretty, like, we've learned a lot through this about Catholicism, because none of us are Catholic, so we don't have a lot to go off of besides what we've learned and read. And I think, like, Holy Week especially has given me a greater appreciation. Like, the day that Notre Dame burned, we talked about that for a little while, and we prayed for the building, because, like, that's a travesty in numerous ways. And, it, like, it's just so strange to have all these things falling on the week of the show. But, like, I choose not to look too deeply into that.
But there's a little, I can tell, that you're, ascribing some meaning there. Why was this show added? This was added to the season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why it was added?
So traditionally, senior theater majors have a senior project, and that can be anything from writing a play to having a lead role in one of the main stage shows or directing a play. And because I want to direct as my career plans...
Yeah.
That's what we chose to do. Like, we started planning this all the way back last April.
Excellent. And Olivia, is she a good director?
What's
she a good director?
Oh, yeah. She is.
Of course. Well, I've been talking here about Doubt, a Parable with Deidre Freitas and Olivia Knapp. That show is presented by York College Theater Department tonight at 7:30 and again tomorrow at 7:30. And you'll have to help me pronounce the hall. Is it Gurganus Hall?
Yep, Gurganus.
I got it right, Gurganus Hall. That's at 10th and Kiplinger in York. Thanks so much for coming to the Mill this morning from York to talk about this production.
Thanks for having us.
Really appreciate it. Stay here with Friday Live, a conversation about comics, low art, and fine art, as well as another theater production in York. That's all in the next 15 minutes here on Friday Live. This Saturday, as part of American Spring Live, you and your kids can join researchers at Homestead National Monument of America in collecting data and investigating how organisms respond to the change from winter to spring. For more information about this and other American Spring Live events in Nebraska, go to netnebraska.org/springlive. It may be only spring, but in Nebraska, it's never too early to start thinking about Cornhusker football. On this week's All About Books, Pat Leach invited Deborah Cleave White to talk about her new book, The Spirit of Nebraska, A History of Game Day Traditions. Deborah shared backstories to the even well-known Cornhusker traditions.
The university wanted to create a mascot head, so they hired a former Disney artist named Bob Johnson to design Herbie's head, and they sent him a picture of a former Husker football player who played for the Baltimore Colts, who played for the Dallas Cowboys as an inspiration for Herbie's face, and that football player was John Dutton.
You'll learn a lot more about the University of Nebraska and the traditions of football Saturdays from The Spirit of Nebraska by Deborah Cleave White. The interview is online at netnebraska.org/allaboutbooks. This is Friday Live on NET Radio. I'm Genevieve Randall. The Golden Husk in Ord presents the Nebraska Grown Arts Festival on April 27th. This festival features local art from the area and ends with a concert by the Lincoln-based group, The Bottle Tops. And joining me now to talk about it are Don Hagee, Executive Director of the Golden Husk, also a member of The Bottle Tops, Mike Semrad, and Becky Bozen is here this morning, who is working with Nebraska Community Foundation. Great to have all three of you here at the table.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So glad to be here.
And Don, thank you for driving from Ord this morning.
Yes, it was a beautiful morning to drive, so I'm very happy to be here.
You got the good spring weather for this drive from
Ord. Absolutely.
So why did you think, Don, that it was important to come all the way from Ord this morning to talk about this particular event?
Well, we just love the Nebraska Grown Arts Festival, and it's our third year of holding the festival. It's so meaningful to me because there's so many partnerships involved with this event. A good friend of mine, Betty Carlson, who owns the Main Street Gallery, she is the person that I collaborated with to start this, and she's so passionate about featuring artists in our area. And we just wanted to really work on growing the culture of and the knowledge about what's happening within the Loup Valley region with arts and culture. We always end with a concert, and I'm so happy to be welcoming the Bottle Tops back to the stage because they're just such a fun band. And again, people are thrilled to know that there's Nebraska-based bands that are recording in Nashville and very well-known, and it's going to be a great day of celebration. So.
You mentioned Main Street Gallery. I understand there's two galleries involved, right?
The other one is the Gallery Art and Creativity Center in Comstock, and it's in a beautiful renovated church. Yes, and I had not been there, so 2 years ago when we started this, I drove over, and Sue Dowse is the owner of that art gallery, and she is actually has a show there right now featuring artists from around the region, and so I really encourage people to go there. It's a beautiful drive. The church is just fantastic, and I know that the artwork will be as well. If people come out, we have a punch card, so everyone can pick up a card as they go and they tour the art galleries and enjoy local shopping throughout our region. They can get signatures of people and then turn that punch card in for door prizes at the concert. So it's just a fun way of engaging people throughout the day and also showcasing all of the fantastic artists and shopping that we have in our area.
And then there are workshops that people can go to at the two galleries and at the Golden Husk, right? What are those workshops?
Okay, so each year we feature different artists who are willing to give their time and talents back to our community and host workshops. So we have watercolor, glasswork, drawing, doodling, and I'm hopeful for pottery. We also have a lady lady who just loves to bring all different types of crafts just to encourage kids to start exploring with the arts. And so she will be at the Husk as well.
Nice. So there's a lot of things going on. So, Mike, let's talk about the Bottle Tops
Hello, everyone. Hello, America.
Yeah, right? How would you describe the music that the Bottle Tops play?
The Bottle Tops music's very very unique. You know, it's a little bit of rockabilly, a little bit of Americana, a little bit of bluegrass. So it's really everything somebody would want to hear if they're looking to go out and have a good time. You know, we always like to keep it optimistic and fun and bubbly. And so, and the stories we tell, and of course, carry on stage, there's nothing like that. So,
well, I have to say, Mike, if you don't mind me saying, your glasses, your hair, your jacket, everything, you're sort of channeling a little bit of Buddy Holly or something. I think
I've heard that before, and I've never heard of this guy. I need to look him up.
Right. Well, Becky, anything else you think that we should know about this event going on?
We just have so many treasures in Nebraska, and particularly Greater Nebraska, and the folks in Valley County do a tremendous job of elevating arts and culture. So this is just a great opportunity to go out, check out Valley County if you haven't been, and experience the arts by Nebraskan artists, which is really cool.
And have the Bottle Tops played at Golden Husk
before? We have played there once before, yes, indeed.
And What's the sound like in there? Because there's actual corn husks in the wall.
That's right. Yeah. And I was actually curious about that, too. Of course, being, you know, it's our sound, so we want to make sure, you know, it's right. And they had told me the story behind how it was built. And I was just amazed. I sat and stared at the walls, not only because they're made of a certain material, but they're actually designed incredibly well, and it looks architecturally beautiful in there. So.
And I have to brag on Dawn and the Golden Husk, because they just had Glenn Miller, and they have a new sound system. I have never heard Glenn Miller sound that good. Like, wow! You know, as a theater person, I get all itchy about good sound, and man, that place is the place to play.
Well, I've been talking with Becky Bozen, Mike Semrad, and Dawn Hagee, and the Bottle Tops, Mike Semrad, is in that band. They're playing at the Nebraska Grown Arts Festival, which is April 27th, hosted by the Golden Husk in Ord. The day starts with gallery tours and workshops in the morning and in the afternoon, and ends with the Bottle Tops with a show at 7:30 p.m. Dawn Hagee is the director of the Golden Husk in Ord. So Dawn, Mike, Becky, thank you for all filling my table this morning.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
You're welcome. And for more information about this or any event you hear about here on Friday Live, go to netnebraska.org/radio and look for the Friday Live page. Genevieve Randall, and next I'm joined by artist Karen Koontz with Constellation Studios and artist Bob Hall and Jordan Scribner. Constellation is hosting a show called Worlds Apart, Comics and Fantasy in Prints, which is up through May 30th. The show complements, by the way, the Lincoln Science Fiction Convention, Constellation 10, which features gaming, illustration artists, authors of fantasy and sci-fi, and costumes, April 26th through the 28th. There's some adult content in this exhibition. Mm-hmm. So Karen, Bob, and Jordan, I'm excited to talk about this show at Constellation.
Yes, thank you.
Did you know that there was this sci-fi convention before, Karen, that shared a name with your studio?
Yes, they have been doing this conference for 10 years, apparently. So I met one of the organizers, developed this idea that it would be wonderful to complement the conference and bring in a new audience and have people see the connection to fine art as well as, shall we call it, low art. Sorry, guys.
I only do low art. Yeah. Only interested in low art.
The idea of these popular ways that comics and images have developed and how fine artists make a distillation of those concepts.
Mm-hmm. Bob and Jordan, what are each of your reactions to that or thoughts on that?
That's something that there's definitely still a bit of a struggle as far as doing comic work, especially in terms of like getting work that you can support yourself on and getting people to kind of take you seriously from the get-go. I'm saying this as a younger kind of artist trying to break into the industry, but definitely not as prevalent as maybe back towards the earlier 1900s when comics were first just getting started, but a lot more people, especially people who grew up with comics, have an easier time seeing them as serious art.
Now, of course, Sheldon has a fantastic collection of comic art, which they trot out every once in a while. Comic art is being featured in a lot more major museums and galleries. I went to the Denver Museum a year ago and was interested to see them selling a scholarly biography of Jack Kirby in their gift shop, who was one of the fathers of comic book art. And his influence and the influence of comics in general on art goes way beyond Roy Lichtenstein. Mm-hmm. You look at art today and you are to a large extent with art that deals with subject matter, especially dealing with the influence of comic book art.
What makes it a comic or a cartoon or graphic design?
Well, I think I was really looking for an interpretation of the graphic language of comics. And it could actually be quite abstract, but there's always something so strikingly strong and eye-grabbing about how the dark shapes work against the light shapes. So it's the negative-positive play that these artists all bring out, and it makes it very readable. So it's about how it grabs the eye. Certainly there's a lot of figuration in this exhibition that might be a common denominator. They're telling stories or essence of a story, especially since I was looking at printmakers who have distilled these ideas, and they're not necessarily making comics, but they are being inspired by it.
There's art where the comic-type imagery, just purely the image, has affected what people are doing. And then there's the essence of actual comic work, I think, is sequential. Mm. They don't necessarily have to follow like a movie script. They're not storyboards, but this picture plus this picture equals something bigger than both of them. In comic book parlance, the space between the pictures is called the gutter. I want to write a biography called My Life in the Gutter sometime. And the theory is that something happens in that space between the two pictures that you fill out. And so comics is a very interactive kind of medium.
Bob, you grew up right here in Nebraska, and your involvement in theater took you to New York at one point. And then when did illustration and cartoons or comics enter the picture for you?
I was looking for a marketable skill that I could have in New York, and somebody said, oh, you can kind of draw. Why don't you consider doing comics? And I remembered comics when I was a kid. A lot of them were kind of crude. I mean in the drawing style. Yeah. It was the low end of the commercial art world, and it's where a lot of people tried to get their start. Because if you hadn't had training, it was an earn while you learn business. There were some really wonderful people, but I said, maybe I could do those. So I took a look at some of what was happening, and it was during a renaissance period for comics. And I said, oh boy, I can't do this right now, but I want to. Because I became fascinated by just the relationship between the storytelling of theater and storytelling in pictures of comics seemed to me to relate. And I said, I know I can do this if I work hard at it. So it was my day job.
In addition to the theater stuff. And Jordan, you're also from Nebraska originally. Where did you grow up? And then what path has art taken you on?
Grew up here in Lincoln, Nebraska, born and raised, and just was taken a pretty typical path up through Lincoln High School and into UNL. And it wasn't until later in high school I was like, oh, I can actually take classes in this and maybe do something professionally with this, because I was originally a musician going into college and playing saxophone, but I feel like I'd be more comfortable being able to express things that I can work on by myself and be able to get these things out on a page. So I left for Savannah, Georgia, and went to the Savannah College of Art and Design for sequential art, and that's where I started putting in a lot more time into comics specifically and realizing, like, oh, this is something that's just tracked back since my childhood and has been a huge influence on me that I didn't even realize. I spent so much time growing up reading manga and reading mostly, like, indie comic books. So it's taken me on a really interesting trip, and now I am tracked back again and started incorporating some music and interest in some different fields that I was exploring before I really settled into the visual arts. Like, okay, I can find my voice in this and then find people who are interested enough to let me make this my career.
And here you are, part of this exhibition.
Yeah.
The exhibition we've been talking about is at Constellation Studios in Lincoln. The title is Worlds Apart, Comics and Fantasy in Prints. And that is up through May 30th. I've been talking about the show with Karen Kuntz, Bob Hall, and Jordan Scribner. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Challenging, informing, and inspiring, this is NET Radio and NETNebraska.org. A tale of a galley slave turned champion chariot racer is the plot of the Yorkshire Playhouse's most recent production, Ben-Hur, an epic comedy, premieres next Thursday, April 25th at 7:30 p.m. And to tell us more about the production is director Danielle Deal. Good morning, Danielle.
Good morning.
So as I mentioned, this play is centered around a galley slave who becomes a chariot racer. What more can you tell us about the plot of this show?
This plot of the show is very complicated. It's kind of a play within a play, of course. So it's actually four actors who decide to put on the tale of Ben-Hur, the epic, sweeping tale of Ben-Hur, all by themselves.
Uh-huh.
So as you can imagine, nothing goes wrong with that at all.
Not at all. Not at all. Yeah, Ben-Hur itself, there was a movie from 1959,
yes.
Right? So how has this been translated into a kind of theater production and comedy then?
Right. So, I always remember watching Ben-Hur around Easter time, so it's kind of nice that we're doing this around Easter time. So the movie is huge. You've got these, you've got your slave ship, you know, where they're all rowing, and you've got, of course, the iconic chariot race. And so they try to put this show on with a very low budget. And only four actors, and then what I call the rest of our cast, which is nine dummies who play everybody else. So, it's kind of amazing, and it's great piece. The layers of comedy in this are, there's so many. It's, you know, physical jokes, and then the cast is hilarious, and the costumes are hilarious, and how they do the set pieces is hilarious. There's even musical jokes that come in. The music that plays is that kind of have that melodrama thing where when the hero comes on, a certain song plays, and when the villain comes on, a certain song plays.
So, kind of like a melodrama then,
yes,
in a way.
Yes, so you've got those aspects too. So
that is really fun. Now, you mentioned four actors and the dummies. So how are you using those dummies on stage with the actors?
The dummies play other characters that they can't be. So if they all play multiple characters, but if they can't both be on, both their characters can't be on the stage at the same time, they might just throw a dummy in there and then voice the dummy. So, or, you know, they're the other slaves on the ship, or, you know, they're the pirates that invade, or, you know, there's lots of different things.
A little bit of ventriloquist dummy aspect layered in.
Yes,
that does, it already makes it funny, Danielle, because I think of Ben-Hur as being so serious when I think of the movie tale, right?
Yeah.
But then, throw a ventriloquist in there on the chariot.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right.
And it's already funny. Now, you know, because we've been hanging out here at the mill this morning with a bunch of guests in the room, that York College has a theater production that was on the show earlier. earlier. Does Yorkshire Playhouse and the College Theater Department, do they ever collaborate or is there crossover?
Yes, we do. Yeah, it's a small town and we definitely like to share. So we share a lot of props and we share a lot of costumes, and then we also share actors sometimes. In fact, in this show, we have two York College students in this particular production, and we're always excited when we can collaborate on things. So
nice. And a good experience for those students,
yes,
too, to have more opportunities.
Yeah, to have more different opportunity than a college setting. So,
well, if you're ready to laugh, Ben-Hur, an epic comedy, runs April 25th through the 28th and May 3rd through the 5th. And to learn more about the show, you can head on over to netnebraska.org for a link on the Friday Live page. Telling us all about this thrilling comedy was director Danielle Deal with Yorkshire Playhouse. Danielle, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Did noisy traffic or a loud passenger in your car just interrupt your Friday Live experience? Well, the digital world has given us a do-over. We podcast the show each week, and you can look for that later this afternoon on our Facebook page or on our website. The address is netnebraska.org. Speaker on the Humanities on the Edge series is Charlotte Biltikoff, who spoke in Lincoln to this year's series theme of post-truth futures by focusing on issues surrounding food.
I'm really interested in conflicts over how we understand facts about food and health and the way that we struggle through contests over the facts and also what to do with the facts.
Hear a conversation with Charlotte Biltikoff on this week's Friday Live Extra by downloading wherever you get your podcasts or by listening on our website at netnebraska.org. Be sure to check out the arts calendar on our website, both to make plans and to add your event. The address is netnebraska.org/radio. Just click events. Here are some highlights. An exhibition at the National Willa Cather Center in Red Cloud brings together work by 13 Native American contemporary visual artists. Savages and Princesses, The Persistence of Native American Stereotypes is up through May 25th. Wayne State College hosts the next event at their Plains Writers Series on Thursday at 2 p.m. with guest reader Theodore Wheeler. And at the International Quilt Study Center and Museum in Lincoln on Thursday this week at 5 p.m., an exclusive up-close look at some of the museum's collection of quilts with words. For more information about these and other events, visit our website, netnebraska.org/radio.
Support for humanities-related programming on NET Radio comes from Humanities Nebraska, delivering opportunities to engage with history and culture on the web at humanitiesnebraska.org.
Friday Live, the Nebraska Repertory Theater, the state's only professional regional theater, presents for one night only, Spirit of 68, a celebration of the theater's 50th anniversary on April 20th in Lincoln. Joining me to talk about it are the Rep's Artistic Director, Andy Park, and from the Johnny Carson School of Theater and Film, the head of the design program, Laurel Shoemaker. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Great to have you here. And boy, congratulations on 50 years of this Nebraska Repertory Theater.
Oh, yeah. It's exciting. You know, you can't take success like that for granted. You know, an arts organization making it for 50 years is a big deal. And so we're definitely excited to honor this moment, and we're going to do it in a high fashion.
Oh, yeah. It's really great. There's an exciting spectacle that we'll have and a toast to the rep. And I just can't believe that it's been 50 years. I started working for the rep as a freshman in 1976. And it has really formed my career, so it's amazing.
Have you been with them the whole time, Laura?
Oh, no.
Okay, I was
going to
say.
I had to leave and then come back and leave again and come back, just like every Nebraskan.
Well, just like coming home then to the rep, right?
Absolutely.
What are some of the highlights from the last 50 years, either that you've heard about or that you've experienced yourselves?
Oh.
Well, you know,
there's stories that you feel like you can't share on the radio,
there's
Laurel.
There's tons of those.
I was reading on your face that maybe there was some stories you're not going to share, right?
Well, you know, one of the really neat things about the event that we have on Saturday is Bob Hall, who was actually directed in that first season in 1968, and so he directed Sergeant Musgrave's Dance. And he was actually there at the very beginning. And then, of course, went on to be an artistic director for the rep at one point. And it's great that he'll be there. Also, Virginia Smith will be there. Dave Landis will be there. And they're sharing memories about, you know, their time with the rep, shows that really stuck out. And I kind of consider those people rep royalty, you know.
I would say. Laurel, how important do you think it is to have the Nebraska Repertory Theater here?
Well, better than in Nebraska, it's really great. It's great for our students are a part of it, so it gives them a professional background and a professional purview, sort of, so that they learn how to do this in a quick and professional way, I guess, so we have a clean look, and it helps everybody grow, and also it gives Lincoln and Nebraska someplace to go to see live theater that they know will, you know, has some standards that are above, you know, above the line, per se. So I think it's important for our city to have this.
When you think back to when you were a student and everything was really new, how does that compare to now?
Oh, well, now, you know, I'm a seasoned lighting designer. That's what I do mostly. And so I don't freak out or get all nervous. I think, oh, yeah, we're going to turn on some lights, and it's going to be really fun, and it'll look great. When I first got this job the first time with the rep, Dan Stratman, who is at the Lead Center, hired me. It was my first professional job in the theater, and I just was over the moon with excitement because I've, you know, only been in high school, and now they're hiring me, and oh my gosh, I'm on my way. And so it's just has that kind of big arc that's pretty exciting.
Andy, the celebration includes, as we've said, a spectacle of performances featuring live music, large-scale puppetry, and stilt dancing. Just how large are those puppets, and what is stilt dancing?
Yeah, so stilt dancing is when you're literally on stilts and you're dancing around. So yeah, we have amazing stilt walkers that will be performing, and we have large-scale puppetry. I think the largest puppet, how large is that puppet?
Oh, it's like 18 feet tall, and it's 8 feet wide. Just the head is 8 feet wide. She looks great, and the stilts are amazing. You take a 6 foot person and add 5 more feet to them, and they come out, and you're like, wow, that's amazing. And then there's these huge puppets,
and the audience is actually involved. You know, so the audience learns how to participate in a drum circle, so they help score the event. They're participating. We sort of blend the line between spectator and you know, I guess they're spec actors, maybe.
They're spectators.
Yeah.
I like spectators. We'll coin the new term, right?
Yeah, and oh, there's this live band, and hearkening to 68, they're going to play Soul Sacrifice, just like we're at Woodstock, so that's amazing, too.
Well, the Nebraska Repertory Theater, they present Spirit of 68. It's a celebration of the theater's 50th anniversary, and that's on April 20th at 7:30 p.m. at the Temple Building on the UNL campus in Lincoln. Andy and Laurel, thanks for telling us about this event.
Thank you. This was great.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
For more information about this show or anything on this morning's program, head over to the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. conversation with pianist George Winston is still ahead here on Friday Live. He's performing at the Merriman in Kearney and has a new album out. Next, Loco at the Rococo. Friday the 26th marks the 88th annual Lincoln Gridiron Show, which will be held at the Rococo Theater. And to chat about events is Corey Wasserberger. It's great to have you here, Corey.
Good morning.
Tell me what your involvement is with the event, with this particular event.
I am the fortunate, or perhaps unfortunate, chair of the Gridiron Show. This is my second year chairing it.
Congratulations.
So, thank you.
2 years chairing the Gridiron Show. This event is hosted annually by the Gridiron Club of Lincoln. How many members are in that club? Tell us a little bit about the group.
Oh, we've got probably close to 20 people who are involved in the show, whether writing, acting, helping put the production on.
Yeah. So. And so for those who've never heard of this, and our statewide audience as well, who may not, you know, be in Lincoln to witness this, tell us a little bit about what the show is.
So the Gridiron Show is, well, it's group therapy, in part, for some of us. But it's also an opportunity to have a Nebraska-centric show about state, local politics, also news events, things that tickle our fancy. It's our opportunity to poke the googly eye of certain politicians at times.
So
it's a lot of fun.
The performances involve, as you say, political incorrectness, some roasting, and general inappropriateness. Is there any limit to what can happen during the Gridiron Show?
You have to come to find out.
To find out what the limit is?
Yeah.
Okay. Some performances I hear also include some puppets. We just talked about puppets with Nebraska Rep. And so I'm like, wait, are there puppets and stilts in both of these shows?
We might have had last year a Kermit the Frog singing a song about the death penalty.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever thought about Kermit singing a song about the death penalty.
Or drug concoction, rainbow connection, same thing.
What other performers can attendees expect to see at the show?
There's some songs. There's live skits. There's also some videos that we put together ahead of time. So it's a nice evening. It's a great venue. We're happy to be back there again this year at the Rococo. So it's just a lot of fun.
And this is the 88th annual show. So how has...
Actually, it's the 89th.
Oh, yeah. 89th. Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah.
So what do you know about how the show has changed over the years?
Oh, it's transformed. It's gone through different kind of iterations. The University Club used to host it, and it was a different demographic, let's say, of performers as well as the audience back then. And it's gone through several stages, and the version of it I know is the one I love today, and it's a very, it's fair to both sides, I think. There's a lot of good-natured ribbing there, and people can come and kind of relax a little bit, enjoy and laugh at some of life's, in Nebraska's, oddities.
Oddities and political uniqueness, maybe,
yes.
Perhaps. Well, if you're looking for a night filled with skits, videos, song parodies, and some political incorrectness, consider attending the 2019 Gridiron Show. It's at the Rococo Theater. It's the 89th annual show, and it will be held Friday, April 26th, 7 p.m., so a week from today. And sharing with us about the show was Corey Wasserberger. Corey, thanks.
Thank you.
The Omaha Chamber Music Society presents the next Echo Nova concert called The Forces Inside next Monday. Corbin Hirschhorn of KVNO tells us more.
Music is its own descriptor. You don't have to have text or program to appreciate great music because it's its own language and it tells you something that words can't really explain, you know? It's always like first in my head when we're talking about programs and what does this all mean. I'm always thinking it means what it sounds like. That's what it means. That's why it's so great.
John Klinghammer, clarinetist and organizer of Echo Nova's concert at Kaneko on Monday, The Forces Inside. He's no stranger to the series since he was its co-founder and first artistic director. Klinghammer has since accepted a chair in the Kansas City Symphony, but Echo Nova and its dedication to innovative chamber music survive.
I think it's great. It seems like Kaneko has really embraced the series. I know they've done some different things with it since I've been gone, but whenever you have an arts organization like Kaneko that's willing to allow you to use their space, that are open to trying things and just having people perform in their space, I mean, it's great. great for us to have that opportunity.
The Forces Inside comprises music of the 20th and 21st centuries, with each piece challenging the musical conventions and techniques of its respective era. The five-member ensemble on violin, cello, clarinet, harp, and percussion will perform works by Erwin Schulhoff, as well as contemporary composers Gilad Cohen and Kevin Putz.
The line, "The Forces Inside," comes from the composer Kevin Putz's description of his piece, "And the Legions Will Rise." And when he's talking about legions rising, he's referring to this sense that he has that we all have these forces inside that are ready to rise up in events of tragedy and distress, sort of rise up and fight against those things and overcome them. So that's sort of what that piece means for him. I thought that also worked really nicely with the two other pieces on the program.
While these composers and their music work together thematically, what's most important to Klinghammer and this concert overall is the listening experience.
One thing that I often think about when I'm programming something is, and we come up with these titles and programs, right? The Forces Inside is the title of the show, and we talked about some of those ideas, binding these pieces together. But I always feel like when I'm looking at music to program, what I'm really trying to do, honestly, is find beautiful music that I find interesting, that I think the audience will find interesting, and especially in this case where we have a new music series, something that's new to them, you know, something people haven't heard before, and that I've come across, and I think that, gosh, people should hear this. This is such a great piece of music. So for me, I honestly always approach programming from a sonic perspective first. It's like, what do I like? How can I make a program that's going to be, you know, just going to knock their socks off as far as their musical experience?
The Forces Inside, part of the Echo Nova concert series at Kaneko, is this Monday, April 22nd at 7 p.m. For more information or tickets, visit omahachambermusic.org.
I'm Genevieve Randall, and my next guest here on Friday Live is the celebrated pianist George Winston. He is coming to Nebraska, and his performance at the Merriman Performing Arts Center in Kearney is tonight. And it's just ahead of the release of his new album, Restless Wind, which is due out on May 3rd. George Winston, so glad to have this time to talk with you here on Friday Live.
Nice to be here, Genevieve.
So your 14th solo album, Spring Carousel, was released ahead of this tour. We're looking forward to your new album as well. But Spring Carousel, I'd like to talk about for a minute. It seems like a pretty personal album. You composed the music while you were recovering from a bone marrow transplant. So if you don't mind, what was going on while you were working on that album?
Well, after I had the transplant at City of Hope, facility near Los Angeles, and they're a cancer research facility as well as a hospital. They have a village right next to it that you can stay at and just walk to your doctor's appointment. I had access to the auditorium piano all the time. So while I was practicing for when I was going to start touring again, a bunch of songs just happened. I realized that it was a benefit record for City of Hope. They're a nonprofit organization, and the album would not have happened without their treatment and without their piano.
How did writing music while you were going through your recovery help you?
The fact that I was able to give something back to City of Hope like that was very positive. I never try to compose anything. I'm practicing a lot, you know, and then once in a while something kind of comes out of the subconscious or something, and if it stays around, then it's a song that either gets played live or goes on a record or both.
And how's your health right now?
Yeah, doing good.
That's so good to hear. Well, on your tour, what music are you bringing with you to the Merriman Center in Kearney?
By the way, the concert's also a benefit for the Community Action Partnership of Mid-Nebraska to help with the flood victims.
Oh, thank you.
It'll be what I call the winter show, which is what I regard as autumn and winter type songs. I have two different shows. I try to alternate each time I play someplace. The other one's called The Summer Show, and it's spring and summer-type songs, in my view. It'll have some of the melodic folk piano things from the recordings, a couple of things from the Spring Carousel album as well, and then some of Vince Guaraldi's Peanuts pieces. He was the composer for the first 16 of the Peanuts episodes, like Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown, and some up-tempo stuff, New Orleans Rhythm and Blues piano, kind of where I'm coming from musically currently.
Well, so tell us about Restless Wind. What's the concept or inspiration behind that new collection?
It's a bunch of different kinds of songs, instrumentals. Really, the bottom line is these songs as instrumentals just seem to fit together over time. Kind of like droplets of water coalescing into a cloud, you know, sort of together to form that cloud over time. It'll be out on May 3.
And it seems like you've pulled together some inspiration from a number of different previous artists for that collection.
Yes, Sam Cooke, a lot of great composers out there. The song, The Wayward Wind, from 1956. Muskrat Ramble medley, an old New Orleans traditional jazz standard by Kid Urie from 1921. Yeah, kind of a variety of different things. Some ballads, some up-tempo.
Many of your fans who are listening may know that you play some other instruments in addition to piano. You play guitar and harmonica. What got you hooked on music in the first place?
Well, when I heard The Doors in early 1967, I was inspired to get an organ to play in a band some point. Then 4 years later, I heard Pat Waller's recordings from the 20s and 30s and immediately switched to piano.
And then how did the guitar and harmonica come into the picture?
Well, essentially, I'm a song player. And some songs just don't sound good on the piano, and they're more of a guitar piece or a solo harmonica piece. Those instruments can be played solo, also accompanying yourself. Solo is my entire temperament for playing, and I added those two later, and it's nice. It's good to have the options.
George Winston is performing in Kearney at the Merriman Performing Arts Center. That concert is tonight at 7:30 p.m. His most recent album is Spring Carousel, and his new album, due out on May 3rd, is Restless Wind. George Winston, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thanks, Genevieve, and great to be here. It's my first time, you know. Not first time in Nebraska, but first time in this region.
Excellent. Well, enjoy central Nebraska. It's a beautiful part of the state.
Hey, thank you.
This is Friday Live on listener-supported NET Radio. Radio, classical music on Morning Concert, and this afternoon, Laura Black with Classics by Request. Be sure to visit the NET website for podcasts of the show at netnebraska.org/radio. Thanks to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including Elise Stastny, engineer James DeShano, and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall.
Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Neighbors Church, featuring a screening of Won't You Be My Neighbor? With actor David Newell, who played Mr. McFeely. Thursday, April 25th and Friday, April 26th, 7 p.m. at 575 Fallbrook Boulevard, Suite 102 in Lincoln. NeighborsCommunity.org. And Union Bank. Locally owned with a commitment to lasting customer relationships, Union Bank offers customers personal and business banking, as well as wealth management services. Union Bank, member FDIC.